This is URN Sport.
That was the call. Raise your back proudly. You've done your country proud.
Never really see Lara struggle. And it's about 6 yards over the fence for Lara.
Well, I don't think he's only bowling short. I think he's bowling rubbish. He's bowling like my Auntie Annie. When she'd had too much sherry to drink.
How about that? Absolutely brilliant from Shane Warne.
Brilliant Yorker. Absolutely brilliant. Malinga with six.
Yet another 50 by Sachin Tendulkar. He'll raise his bat.
There it is. 500 for Davis and a 500 for England.
Short.
For 15 best bowling figures on this ground.
That'll get there. Joe Root has gone to 100 here at Trent Bridge.
You are listening to Sticky Wicket on URN Sport. Yes, welcome to Sticky Wicket. This is the first episode of a fortnightly edition of a new cricket podcast here on URN Sport. My name is Joe Tanner. I am joined in the studio by Laura Williamson and Arve. Today we'll be covering all aspects of the international and club cricket scene from around the world. So we'll start with our national side, England, currently involved in the T20 series in India. Some very impressive England bowling laid the foundation for a 7-wicket win in India in the first T20 international, which took place on Thursday. India made 147 for 4 over 20 overs, while England made 148 for 3 in 18.1 overs, with Morgan scoring 51 and Root on 46. So guys, first of all, what was key do you think in that victory for England after so much disappointment, it has to be said, across England's tour in India throughout the whole winter, really?
I honestly think it was the change of strategy by Owen Morgan by bringing in different bowlers and then changing over to Moeen Ali and then giving him the spin attack, like taking it off from Adil Rashid, because I honestly didn't think Adil Rashid clicked the whole series. And then I think him bringing forward the off spin and Moeen Ali was turning point for this 2020 match.
Yeah, again, I think it was in the bowling. I think that we're just a lot better in the 2020 because we don't have that middle period where in 50 over cricket we sometimes struggle to take wickets. I think the bowling attack was much more disciplined this time than when during the ODI series. Obviously, like with the addition of Tymal Mills, who because of injury can't play in the 50 over series, he is one of our best players, or is appearing to be one of our best players.
Certainly, it's just been a miraculous victory for England, really, when considering that India, they have the IPL, they are in many ways the front runners of the T20 game. Was the victory a surprise to you guys?
Not really, to be fair. If you look at the Indian side at the moment, I think they're playing their B team on the first game because they didn't have many of their players are injured or not. They didn't play their top two spin bowlers, to be fair. Ashwin and Jadeja were on rest after the ODI and the test. This was not a big surprise, but it definitely could have been done better by England, I felt.
I don't think it was a surprise because England have been improving very much in the shorter format of the game. I mean, like, you just look at their transformation since the World Cup in Australia. We were runners-up in the T20 World Cup, so we've been proven that we can perform against the big sides, we can perform in India. And I think that, you know, 2020 is one of those games where it's anyone's on the day. Like, you look at the World Cup and how far Bangladesh pushed India and how Afghanistan beat the West Indies. But I think what's really exciting about this England side is how much depth there is to it. So you've got the team that they put out, but they've got a squad of about 15 or 16 players, but there's still people on the periphery that are pushing all of those players to do really well. So I think that's why England have been performing so well recently.
So strength and depth being a really key factor in the victory in India. Of course, the next T20 game is coming up at 1:30 today. How do you guys see the next game going? Do you think England are going to build on the victory they've just had?
It's arguable whether England could build up on the victory though, but it is possible because India also pose a big threat on their side, which consists of Virat Kohli, and we just know if it's given a task of chasing, Virat Kohli is kind of the best player right now, arguably the best batsman, and if they bring in their bowlers as well, like Ashwin and Jadeja, I think probably England will have a tough competition to face in India today.
Now, of course, some other news has come out in the last day or so for England, that the ODI squad has been announced for the West Indies test, which is coming up in March. And the big news there is that it's an unchanged squad, but Sam Billings has replaced Alex Hales, who fractures his hand in the 2-1 ODI defeat to India last week. So what do we make of the squad selection? Do we think it's justified that the coach hasn't changed too much?
I think it's justified. I mean, they want to build some consistency with the Champions Trophy going up, which they are competing for. They want to win it this time. They came runners-up last time round to India. And I think by doing that, you've got to keep the same squad, because if you keep chopping and changing and bringing in different players, then they're not going to have that flow that they've been having the past like year and a half by having that consistent squad. I think Sam Billings has definitely earned his place. He's been in and around the side quite a lot for the past year or so, and when he stepped in for Alex Hales, he proved that he was more than capable of taking that place. I think Hales will be back in the side and deserves to be back in the side. I mean, he scored England's highest ever score in 50 over cricket just last summer, but obviously he needs time to recover and you don't want to push him back into it too quickly.
Arve, what do you think that Sam Billings can bring to the role?
I think he, as you said, he has been in and out of the side, but he is a great player. Like, he took 20 from the second over in the previous 2020. That was a great start. He had one of the greatest starts as well. So I think Sam Billings is a justified player. He's a really good player for the side at the moment, but you can't debate, like, because Alex Hales and Jason Roy are the best opening pair around in cricket at the moment. I honestly think Hales will be back by Champions Trophy, but a decision to choose Sam Billings is not bad. It's actually a really good decision.
Now, in terms of the ODI test, which the squad has been selected for against the West Indies, how do you see that test really going in terms of the West Indies side and how strong they are at the moment and what they can offer?
The West Indies side are strong, to be fair, but I think England can pull this off because I think it's going on in West Indies, the series, and the English side are pretty well placed in the Caribbean. They do perform really well around them. It's just that the subcontinent they lack in. And with the team they have, with the depth of the squad, having Oyin Morgan, who is a phenomenal captain again, who actually stepped in a lot of time this series, I think they will pull a good victory off against West Indies.
Yeah, I agree. I think England will play well in the West Indies. I think they'll be, because the last time they faced them was when they lost them in the World Cup, I think there'll be almost like a point to prove going out there. They'll want to, you know, say like, look, you may have beaten us last time, but look how much we've developed over the past few months. And you've got every player seems to be contributing at some point, which I think is key to this England side at the moment. There's not one player that's just standing out and saying, right, I'm carrying the team right now. Every player is standing up when he or he's required to.
But yeah, I even think that West Indies are not a really great side in 50-over cricket compared to their 2020 cricket. They did not play the best of cricket because they struggle in the middle overs again, and just every team just takes advantage of their play. So I think England will definitely win the series at West Indies this year.
You touched on the vitality of Owen Morgan there, Arvi, to the one-day international side. We briefly mentioned earlier how Joe Root, there's speculation around his captaincy and whether he could perhaps be the captain of all three England sides. What do you think, from his point of view, the standpoint on the captaincy would be? Do you think he would be willing to take up the role of the three sides, or just test, or just the one day?
I think he's definitely like next cab off the rank for being a captain. I think because of his lack of experience, not just internationally, but he's not really captained Yorkshire either. I think to throw him in at the deep end and giving like the captaincy for all three formats would be a bit too much, and I think it'd be a bit too daunting. I think as well, my issue with him becoming captain this year in such like a busy calendar year for cricket is that we need Joe Root as the batsman more than we need him as a captain. So I think if, you know, Cook steps down, then realistically Joe Root is going to be the person to take over the test captaincy. But I still want him to be able to focus on his batting more than his captaincy, because he is a key player for us in all three formats.
Having said that, I just want to mention, just like a question, why not have Ben Stokes as a captain rather than Joe Root? Because Ben Stokes is an all-rounder. He's legitimately in all the three sides. He plays cricket for Test, ODI and T20, so why not just have him in as a captain?
I think on the occasions, Ben Stokes can be a little bit enigmatic with his play and a bit ill-disciplined as well. I think whilst he can rack up completely brilliant batting totals and really do justice for our Test and One Day sides, he at the same time has a bit of a flair and a bit of a kind of spark to him. I mean, it's not really anyone apart from Joe Root, I don't think, that you could give the captaincy role to at this stage. But no, I don't think Ben Stokes. I think we need to focus more on giving him the licence to do the justice with his batting and his bowling in terms of his leadership roles, really.
I think he's more of like, I see Ben Stokes as more of like a Botham or a Flintoff, in the sense that, you know, the captaincy might maybe like stifle that fire that he has. I think that's probably the worry. I think that he could potentially become a captain, but maybe later on in his career, maybe not just yet, especially as well. I think it's, the only issue with him is that sometimes he is quite injury prone as well, and you wouldn't a captain that is, you know, solidly going to be there. That's which true. You know, you find more from your batsmen than your bowlers.
Absolutely. Well, I think that'll round up our discussion on the England international side, and we're now going to turn to Australia briefly. They've got an upcoming test tomorrow, in fact, in New Zealand, after their 4-1 ODI series win against Pakistan. Yet they start tomorrow without captain Steve Smith. How much of a loss do you think he's going to be to the Wallabies going into that game?
I honestly think he's going to be a very big loss, because Steve Smith is one, like, to be fair, like, I think for me he's kind of the best player at the moment, for me as a captain and as a player, because staying at that level, captaining the Australian side after the World Cup and through the World Cup as well, I think he has done a phenomenal job. Even though he has not been really great, like some of the series, like, he has not played really well up to standards, but he's still been one of the key aspects of Australia winning each game they've played. So I think Steve, and he's a really consistent captain as well. This is the first time he's out with an injury, so I think it'll be quite a big loss. But since it's just a series which doesn't matter compared to the Champions Trophy, I think resting him is well good enough for the Champions Trophy by not giving him that pressure of handling a team before the series.
Well, another team news ahead of that match against New Zealand. Keeper batsman Matthew Wade takes over as skipper, with uncapped Queensland batsman Sam Heaslett joining the squad. What do we make of those changes to the team?
I'm quite surprised by Matthew Wade being given the captaincy. I really thought David Warner should have been the captain rather than Matthew Wade at this moment.
David Warner, I would agree, should have been captaincy, because he's captained before, and I know that, you know, in the past there have been a few issues with David Warner, maybe like temper-wise and that, but I think that actually him in the role as captain gives him a much calmer head, and, you know, he has proven to be a very good captain, and I think, you know, they need that with Steve Smith gone, because Steve Smith has been such a key component to the Australia side predating his captaincy.
I think even David Warner just captained the IPL side, which won the last year. So I think David Warner would actually have been a really good choice, but not sure what just got on their head.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that he, along with Travis Head, put 284 past Pakistan in their one-day international series win with a 57-run victory. So he's clearly very much a steady hand in that Australia squad. What do you think, in terms of other squad selections and other players in that Australia team, can really do the justice against New Zealand?
I'm not sure. I think they're just trying a lot this, which I'm not really a fan of, because the Champions Trophy is coming up. They're not supposed to keep trying new teams before the Champions Trophy, but again, having said that, it's the Australia has been a phenomenal side. Like, they have enough players as well. They have Peter Hanscombe, there are a lot of players coming, Adam Zampa, they're just phenomenal players coming up. So I think they just need to get the right balance squad at the moment, because they have a lot of good talent in them.
Yeah, I think I was really excited in the Big Bash by Chris Lynn, who has been called up to the international squad. He hit 100 in one of the games and performed very well throughout it. And I think that they have got a lot of players coming through. And I don't necessarily mind so much that they're trying out different players, because it is kind of that transition period for them. Obviously, like, after 2015, they had a lot of people retiring. They lost Clark and Rogers, and a lot of people who like performed very, very well for the team. And I think, you know, they are just still kind of trying to find that balance of that perfect squad.
Now, in terms of other international test matches going on at the moment, there's South Africa versus Sri Lanka, who played their latest game in the one-day series on Friday. South Africa won by 8 wickets, getting Sri Lanka all out for 181, while South Africa made 185 for 2. Starring in that game for South Africa were Amla and Du Plessis, getting 57 and 55 runs respectively. Now, what do we make of this South Africa side? Do you think they can kind of pose a threat in the ICC trophy, or do you think that this is just a bit of a flash in the pan, and that Sri Lanka weren't really that much of aren't that much of sort of illustrious opposition?
Having said that, Sri Lanka are at the moment aren't a really strong opposition, but South African team is realistically one of the favourites as well, and a really strong team, which comes from Quinton de Kock in the front. He's a phenomenal opener, and having Quinton de Kock and Amla, it's sort of like having Jason Roy and Alex Hales again on the side. And in the depth, you have De Villiers, who is again one of the best players like from 2000s. And then there's the captain, Du Plessis, who stands up in every occasion. So I think the batting depth is great. The bowling depth at the moment, I'm not sure, but they keep changing it. But again, it's one of the great. If they have Dale Steyn again as an attacking role, and who can calm down, who can give a word to all the other youngsters in the bowling attack, like Kagiso Rabada, I think they are one of the biggest threats again in the Champions Trophy.
Yeah, I think South Africa are going to be a pretty big threat. Like you say, you've got Quinton de Kock and Amla opening. I mean, Amla is just, his form is phenomenal. Like,
it's always been phenomenal. It's just that we never see Amla dipping down. He's always
you just
phenomenal.
Can't fault him. And then AB de Villiers is the kind of player who can just take a game away from you in a few overs. Like, we've seen him hit 150 off very few balls. And and you mentioned Rabada. I really like Rabada. From what I've seen of him, he's performed very well, and for a young fast bowler as well, especially in England, he's going to be like bouncing that into the pitch, and I think he's going to be a very tough opponent to face.
An interesting issue I've found recently about the South Africa team was the Colpack issue of players, like, I think Kyle Abbott's probably the best example of players that I've used this sort of system and this way of doing things, where they've offered a more lucrative deal in the English county game, and then they've moved over, like Kyle Abbott, who's gone to Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Do you think that this could pose a problem for South Africa on the international scene?
Yes, it could, to be fair. At the moment, yeah, it could actually, because even thinking about it, Kyle Abbott was a really good player again. So I think, yes, this does cause a threat. I think the ICC should actually take steps and do something about it, like in the sense that they should make some laws where if you're born over there, you need to play for the country or something in that way, not following lucrative offers, but they should actually find out something and do something about it, because it can affect the country as well.
Because it's clearly an issue surrounding pay, because I know that players in the South African county game don't get paid a lot, considering the price, the wages that players get in the English county game and other county games around the world. Laura, do you think it's going to be an issue for the South African national team?
I think it could be an issue. I mean, you can see why the players do it, because you're basically being given a safety net. If you, they're coming over here to play for Hampshire, I think Carl Abbott was playing for Hampshire, and you get it, you're signing a contract which is going to last you for several years, whereas if you're playing for South Africa, you don't have that safety net. If you fall out of the team, you might not make it back into it, and then your appeal to like English counties is going to fall. And I think maybe that's the issue that South Africa are having. They need to look after their players a little bit more and maybe sort out the county game in South Africa so it is a bit stronger and so that there is that safety net there.
Absolutely. Well, we'll come on to I think that'll round up our discussion there on the international side. Of course, there was some big T20 action at the weekend with the Big Bash competition, with the Perth Scorchers thrashing the Sydney Sixers to win their third title in 4 years. As they thrashed the Sixers by 9 wickets in the final in Wacker. Richardson and Yorkshire all-rounder Tim Bresnan took 3 wickets apiece as the Sixers were restricted to 141 for 9 in Perth. Don't know what I'm saying. Sorry, we'll scrap that bit. I'll just talk about the Big Bash again, hang on. Okay, so we'll turn from international cricket for a second there to focus on the T20 game around the world. So notable action from this in the week gone by has been, of course, the Big Bash in Australia, which saw the Perth Scorchers thrash the Sydney Sixers to win their third title in 4 years. So Australian Jai Richardson and Yorkshire all-rounder Tim Bresnan took 3 wickets apiece as the Sixers were restricted to 141 for 9 in Perth. Michael Kalinga hit 70 not out, and England batsman Ian Bell added an unbeaten 31 as the Scorchers reached the target in 15.5 overs. Perth have previously won the title in 2014 and 2015. The Sixers had earlier beaten Scorchers by 7 runs in the Women's Big Bash League final. We were having the debate earlier about whether England should adopt this kind of cricket league, this T20 cricket league. I know that they've got the NatWest Big Bash going on throughout the summer, but do you think that they should adopt this cricket league of a sort of similar system to the IPL or the Big Bash that would enhance our international side but maybe clog up the cricket calendar during the summer months?
I do think they should actually adopt something like this, because if you see IPL and the Big Bash at the moment, like, each team needs to have at least a fixed list of 7 to 8 players who are local or Australian or Indian. This actually helps the young players who are not seen much in any trophies or any games just come up, and then, like, similar like Chris Lynn, like, after his performance Sydney Sixers, he was just picked up by Australian squad. Similarly, I think even Usman Khawaja, the guy, the opener, he was as well picked up like this. So I think, like, in this stage, you actually find a lot of cricket players. Like, if I'm not wrong, like, the second season of IPL found the player Virat Kohli. So it just brings out the best players in the world. So I think they should actually definitely adopt something like this.
Yeah, I know they've been, like, talking about it for quite a while, about adopting an 8-team franchise, and I think they've delayed it until 2020 because they have most counties on board, but obviously there's this fear of, like, ostracising some fans because, you know, like, Lancashire and Yorkshire will become Manchester, and some people aren't happy about that. But I think that, yeah, if we want to progress, then we're going to have to adopt some form of this, because it attracts the big players, and more than anything, it gives the young guys an experience of playing against those people, and they just, even being on a bench next to those guys in the nets with those guys, they just learn so much and they pick up so much. They improve their game just rapidly.
Do you think as well it would improve England players' adaptability to playing in lots of different types of international cricket, so the one day and the test match and the 2020 as well? Because it seems to me like a lot of the England players, like recently Tyler Mills, as fastest bowling record, but only able to play T20 cricket. So I think, do you think they've got that effect that it can have, that it can make players sort of more all-rounder, not just on the field, but in the sense that they can play different style, different types of cricket.
I definitely think they can, because if I'm not wrong, like before the 2011 World Cup where India won, like before that World Cup, 2007 won or 2007 won, yeah, they didn't actually play really well. They got out in the group stage, but after this system was introduced, I think the IPL system, slowly like players started developing, we started finding new players, and so hence like they won the next World Cup and they're now a phenomenal side. Similarly, Australia for that matter, like they just have always been phenomenal because they've been adapting these methods like consistently. So I think like doing something like this is really great again.
Yeah, I think it does, and I think it helps to develop test cricket as well, because in like where we are at the moment with test cricket, it's trying to get crowds to the test arenas, and people find it a bit dull in comparison to 50 over and 2020 cricket. But I think if they start to merge a bit more, people will be, if you can come and see Virat Kohli like hitting sixes in test cricket, people are gonna go and buy tickets to see that. I think as well, by having these franchise things where you get international players coming to play, you get to see really good test players that you wouldn't necessarily see in the county game. Like, you don't really get the big names coming to play for an English county, so you would never get that test experience unless it's from an English player that's coming back for one or two games every so often.
Yeah,
I think that'll round up our discussion today on Sticky Wicket. I've been Joe Tan. Joining me has been Arve and Laura. Thank you ever so much for joining us here on URN Sport, guys. And yeah, we'll be back next week on this podcast to cover all things in the world of cricket.
This is URN Sport.